All right, hello. Yeah, I had a little bit of trouble getting into Pal Talk. In fact, I'm in Pal Talk on the Mac side rather than the Windows side. I usually do it on the Windows side because that's where my recorder is. And sometimes if I teach on the Mac side, I forget to start my recorder because they're in separate areas. But I do have the recorder going. So it's good to be here with you all. And Cheryl said she wanted to hear something about the retreat, but you know, it's funny. Although the retreat was fabulous, I really don't know what to say about it. You know, I always have trouble. Hold on. Or not. Hold on. I'm dry. Let me get a drink. I am challenged when people ask me to speak about the past. You know, I remember we went to these enlightenment intensives in New Mexico in September, and we would go on a walk or we would go to lunch and we would come back and they would say, okay, now tell us what happened for you at lunch or what happened for you on the walk. And I was like, oh man, you know, I felt it, you know, it's just like just going back into the memory like that and pulling out what happened. It just doesn't feel genuine. What feels genuine for me is the present moment. So, I think I'm just going to pass on talking about the retreat, you know, because I just don't know what to say. It was a great retreat. We had dyads. Everybody had a good time. We made $5,800 for the retreat center. There we go. let me play a song. What's happened for me today is I've packed up the retreat. You know, we had a lot of stuff that had to be packed up. Drove Lynn home, drove Francine home, came home, unloaded the car, did all the accounting, and ran here. So there's been a lot of going, 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 and not a lot of time yet just to kind of settle. So I think what I would like to do is just settle. So here's a song that sounds interesting. It's an instrumental. So there won't be any words, but the title is nice. It's Draw Me Close to You, and it's from an album called Songs from Heaven, Draw Me Close to You. So let me play this song and give me the opportunity to kind of settle in. Oh, it's too loud, sorry. Thank you. Beautiful. That's just what I needed. Good. That was wonderful. All right. So we are looking at step four of the seven steps to awakening. And if there's anybody here that likes to read along with me in the journal, when I get to the journal, here is a link. There you go. There's a link to my journal. I'm going to be starting tonight with quote 787, which is from Sri Annamalai Swami. And this is the quote. If the intensity to know yourself is strong enough, the intensity of your yearning will take you to the self. I'll read that again. If the intensity to know yourself is strong enough, the intensity of your yearning will take you to the self. And last night I had a conversation with Jacqueline and Anne where we discussed the word yearning a little bit. And for me, the word yearning is not it doesn't have a sense of lack in it. You know, for example, you know, if I was a single woman who really wanted a guy and was joining all of these websites, these dating websites to try and find a guy, you know, we might say that I yearn to be in a relationship. But that, in that case, the word yearning would come from a sense of lack. Like, I feel like there's something missing from my life. For me, the word yearning, when it's talking about the spiritual path or, you know, awakening, it's really more equivalent to a calling. It's not that there's a sense of lack. It's just that there's this calling. You know, it's something drawing you. You know, Ramana Maharshi used to refer to the heart as being like a magnet. It's a magnet and it draws you into it. You know, that would be the type of yearning that I experience on the spiritual path. And, you know, after I had this conversation with Jacqueline and Anne last night, probably when I was waking up this morning, I kind of contemplated a little bit, just for a few moments, a few minutes. But I kind of contemplated, you know, what would this life be like if I chose not to follow that calling? And I think that that's maybe where maybe it's a sense of lack, but I think the way it feels more when I contemplate that, it feels more like it's a sense of not following the heart. Therefore, something missing in that way, you know, like not following the heart. So when I read this quote, if the intensity to know yourself is strong enough, the intensity of your yearning will take you to yourself. What this really says to me is that calling, if you really, really hear this calling, if you really, really feel this calling, you know, what you want to do is you want to follow it. Without following the calling, without following the heart, something's missing, right? It's not that in the yearning there's lack. Ignoring the yearning, that's where the lack is. Kind of like earlier in my life, I had a yearning to have a child. It's just something I really wanted to do. And, you know, every time I saw a baby in the mall or somewhere, I could just feel it. You know, it's like a calling, a yearning inside. I just really wanted to have a child. And I had a child. You know, I adopted Jasmine. I raised Jasmine. It was wonderful. And that's complete now, right? To not have done that, to not have followed that calling, to not have followed that yearning, then there might have been the sense of something missing. Like I didn't follow my heart, right? It's kind of like a missed opportunity. Missed opportunity. So if the intensity to know yourself is strong enough, the intensity of your yearning will take you to yourself. The other thing this really reminds me of, there's magic in our yearning and our choice to follow a yearning. Right? There's magic in it. You know, some people would call it miracle. Some people might call it, the law of attraction or something. But, you know, with Jasmine, when I made the decision to adopt from China, all these things just started to fall into place. I mean, it was an absolute miracle. And you know, I could spend the next hour just talking about all of the miracles that happened, just how everything fell into place so that I could adopt that baby girl. But I'm not going to do that. It's unnecessary. But the point is that, you know, when there's this calling, and, you know, we could say that the callings, the yearning, actually comes from the universe. It's like the universe, this is what the universe wants from us in this lifetime. That's why that's placed there inside of our hearts, right? And so when we say yes to the yearning or yes to the calling, then the universe participates in the achievement, right? And that's what happened when I adopted Jasmine. The universe participated. It did its part, and I was working in partnership with the universe to satisfy this yearning to adopt this child. And so if we have this yearning to awaken or to realize the self, and we say yes to this yearning and we follow this yearning with dedication and sincerity, we're not alone in that. The universe provides everything that we need along the way, all of the teachings that we need along the way, and anything else that we happen to need, right? It's provided for us, the clarity that we need, the inner guidance that we need. It all comes. It's our job to say yes to the yearning. It's our job to recognize it as a calling. It's our job to recognize it as what we are here for. And when we say yes, then magic happens. So again, the quote is, if the intensity to know yourself is strong enough, the intensity of your yearning will take you to the self. So I'm going to look at my journal. And I'm reading from June 18th, 2015. So we're talking, you know, 2.25 years ago when I was contemplating this quote, 787. And here's what I wrote. As I look at my life now, I can see that everything I desired with consistent passion when I was 20 and 30 years of age has come into my experience. Nothing is missing. It is all here, down to a surprising level of detail. When I look at others whom I have known well for most of my life, I see the same phenomena has occurred. Even one who used to insist that another would make her poor is now living the story she used to insist upon. What has this to do with truth? What will happen if I take all of my heart's ability to desire and place it with only this? I want to know truth. I don't care what it is. I place no expectations upon it. I simply want to know with absolute clarity the difference between what is true and what is not. And that's the journal entry. So it looks like when I contemplated this quote a couple of years ago, I really focused on the fact that that there's power in saying yes to a yearning. You know, anything that I passionately desire with consistency, you know, for more than a couple of days, anything that I passionately desire with consistency, I could look at my life and I could see that it had all come to be. You know, when I was around 20 years old, I bought this photo album And I used to look at magazines and cut out pictures that represented what I wanted to happen in my life. And I would put these pictures that I cut out of magazines into this photo album. And I spent hours and hours and hours over years just looking at this photo album, just looking at it, looking at the pictures, feeling the desire for what the different pictures represented. And at that time, none of those things were a part of my life experience. And they seemed, you know, like stretches. You know, like, you know, it wasn't something that I knew for a fact would be a part of my life, but it was something that I really, really wanted, really, really desired. And as this journal entry says, everything that was in that book appeared in my life. And again, as if by magic. It's not like I then went and worked hard to make these things happen. When the opportunities arose, I said yes. But the opportunities arose on their own. So the question that the journal entry is asking is, if I have proof that when I really call for something in my heart, yearn for something in my heart, desire something with a consistent passion in my heart, if I already have proof that that is enough to bring things into experience, well, then what happens if I take that power that I know exists from my own experience and I place all of that power of desire with wanting to know truth? And I think it's really important, at least to me, it's really important that this journal entry says, I want to know truth. I don't care what it is. I place no expectations upon it. Because if I can passionately desire, for example, to travel the world, which is one of the things I had pictures of in that book, if I can passionately desire to travel the world and life unfolds for me where I get to travel all over the world all of the time, then I could passionately desire a specific experience that I think is truth and manifest that even if it's not truth. Let me just say that again. If I can passionately desire something specific like traveling all over the world and have that appear in my life, then I could passionately desire what I think is truth, what I imagine is truth, and manifest that experience. This is why it's important, I think, for us to place no expectations upon truth. For us to stay open with the I don't know what it is attitude. I just want to know it. I just want to realize it. I want to discover it. But not define what it is. Because we want to make sure that what we find is truth and not a mental manifestation of what we imagined truth to be. Or at least that's what I want. Right? That's what the search for truth is about. So again, the journal entry says, as I look at my life now, I can see that everything I desired with consistent passion when I was 20 and 30 years of age has come into my experience. Nothing is missing. It is all here down to a surprising level of detail. When I look at others whom I have known well for most of my life, I see the same phenomena has occurred. Even one who used to insist that another would make her poor is now living the story she used to insist upon. What has this to do with truth? What will happen if I take all of my heart's ability to desire and place it with only this? I want to know truth. I don't care what it is. I place no expectations upon it. I simply want to know with absolute clarity the difference between what is true and what is not. And I'm going to move on to 788. So quote 788 says, your most important objective must be realizing the self. If you have not done this, you will spend your time in ignorance and illusion. Now, when Annamalai Swami says, your most important objective must be realizing the self, I feel he's, you know, speaking to an aspirant. You know, he's not speaking to someone who does not yet have the yearning, right? Because nobody has to, nobody is forced to make realizing the self their most important objective, right? So the word must here, the word must, is really talking to someone who has that yearning. The calling has been placed in their heart. The magnet of the heart has turned on, and it is calling them toward self-realization. And this person, you know, is asking, how? What must I do? Right? The yearning has already been placed there. It's already awake. And the answer is, you know, when the aspirant asks, what must I do? The answer is, your most important objective must be realizing the self. You know, if the self-realization is not something that can be realized, if you still want illusion. So, you know, I mean, certainly lots of people kind of desire to know the self. And also, you know, this is important, and this is important, and this is important, and this is important, right? And I kind of want to know the self, too. But what Annamalai Swami is saying is if you really want to know it, then this has to be your most important objective. This has to be the priority of your life. Your entire life needs to revolve around this yearning. Your most important objective must be realizing the self. And it's interesting because he doesn't say it has to be your only objective. You know, like maybe you do have a family. You do still need to, you know, have a job and earn money to support your family. Right? There may be other things that are a part of the life. But this most important objective needs to be your desire to realize the self. He says, if you have not done this, making self-realization the most important objective in your life, if you have not done this, you will spend your time in ignorance and delusion. You know, according to Annamalai Swami, if it's not the most important thing in your life, then self-realization is not going to be achieved. You'll live in ignorance and illusion. And if we think about, you know, what I shared with the previous objective, you know, a previous quote, if we go back to that book that I created when I was 20, had all these pictures in it. And, you know, it's funny because the very last picture in the book was a picture of a woman, a man, and a daughter. That's why I said, You know, everything in that book came into my life to surprising level of detail, because really my immediate family is Ron and Jasmine and me, a man, a woman, and a daughter. You know, it's just surprising detail. So there are all these pictures in this book, and I spent a lot of time looking at these pictures in this book, and this all became manifest. So really what this is saying is that if I want self-realization now, the pictures in the book need to be filled with symbols of self-realization. Just like I looked at the pictures in the book and you know, wanted travel and wanted to own a home and wanted to have a man in my life and then a daughter in my life, and you know, just like I looked at those pictures in the book, and I wanted to be respected by others that was in there. and I looked at those pictures and I desired what was in those pictures and it came into being. If I had a book, maybe on one page I would put a picture of Ramana. Maybe on another page I would put a picture of Arunachala. You know, maybe I would have, I don't know what I would have, whatever represented self-realization for me, right? And if that's the only thing in my book, that's the only thing that I'm desiring, then self-realization will come to me. But if I have a book filled with many, many, many things, that my attention, you know, like let's say I have 50 pages in my book, and 49 of those pages are about things that I want in the world, and one of those pages, you know, has a picture of Ramana and represents self-realization. When I look at the book, right, that would mean that 98% of my attention was going towards illusion, and only 2% of my attention is going towards self-realization. So what am I really asking for with my desire? If 98% of my attention is going to pages in the book that are about what I want to happen in this life, and 2% of my desiring attention is going to symbols of self-realization, I'm saying that I want illusion and ignorance. I'm contemplating, desiring, focusing on illusion and ignorance 98% of the time. And so, you know, I will realize what I've asked for. So if I really want self-realization, then all of the pages in my book need to be filled with symbols of self-realization. And I'm only using this as a symbol. As a symbol of, you know, the heart's desire. In reality, I don't have a book with pictures of self-realization. The book with pictures of self-realization is a symbol for how I choose to live my life, what I choose to focus on in my day, what I choose to do with my time. Is it 98% illusion and 2% self-realization? Is it 70% illusion and 30% self-realization focused? Or is that shifting over on the other side so that maybe it's 30% illusion, but 70% self-realization focused. If I understand the magic of my yearning, what is that yearning for? Hi, Jamie. Your most important objective must be realizing the self. If you have not done this, you will spend your time in ignorance and illusion. I'm going to look at my journal. So from June 18th, 2015. I accept that there must be no distractions. If I really want to know truth, I must desire only truth. With this one intention held to consistently and faithfully, the door shall be opened and the truth shall be revealed with absolute clarity and with no uncertainty remaining. Therefore, this is my commitment. I shall desire only truth now, and I shall let the truth be exactly as it is, without asking it to be anything different. I shall desire only truth now, and I shall let the truth be exactly as it is, without asking it to be anything different. And I think that, at least for me, that speaks for itself. So I'm going to move on to quote 789. Now with quote 789, we move to a different sage. Quote 789 is Shri Sadhu Om. And this is the quote. The mind which has obtained a burning desire for self-attention, which is self-inquiry, is said to be the fully mature one. The mind which has obtained a burning desire for self-attention, that's a capital S, which is self-inquiry, again a capital S, is said to be the fully mature one. It's funny because when I was looking at quote 788 and the journal entry for 788, I had a thought about Elie Ruzdar's definition of a mature spiritual aspirant, but I didn't speak it. And now here we have a quote that really uses that word mature. The mind which has obtained a burning desire for self-attention, which is self-inquiry, is said to be the fully mature one. This is the mind. Excuse me. This is the mind that is more interested in paying attention to the self, awareness, than it is in what's going on in the world or what's going on in the experience of my life. Now, that doesn't mean things don't go on in the world, because they do. And that doesn't mean that things don't go on in this experience of my life, because, you know, they do. But what it means is that even as things are going on in the world and even as things are going on in the experience of my life, that I am interested in keeping my attention inward. You know, one way of keeping the attention inward, as we know, is awareness, watching awareness meditation or loving consciousness meditation or practicing self-inquiry. But one thing that I have come to do as a habit, and maybe you would have to call this kind of a half-in, half-out posture, but when I am not in meditation or not in self-inquiry and I'm out in my day, you know, visiting with people or working or walking my dog or whatever, I remain aware of the fact that I'm aware. It's not the same as sitting down and closing the eyes and shifting the attention in a very deep way into awareness. You know, that's a full all-in posture. This is kind of a half-in, half-out posture. But what it symbolizes is the interest in the self. You know, it's not like I'm in meditation for a certain period during the day, and then I go out into the day in an outward focused way and totally forget awareness or totally forget the self. And the reason awareness or the self is not totally forgotten is because there's interest in it. There's interest in it. I want to be aware that I'm aware. I want to notice myself as the awareness rather than as the body or the mind. I want to notice myself as that which is aware of the thoughts, that which is aware of this voice speaking, that which is aware of any sensations in the body or any emotions. It's self-interest. So maybe there's some level of maturity, right? Not everyone in the world has that interest, right? Their attention is interested in a fully outward focus. And even many people who have some level of this interest, maybe they do spend some time in awareness, watching awareness, but then when they go out into their day, they forget about it. I mean, I know I was that way for many, many years, and I know many friends still claim to be that way today, right? They say, I just forget about it once I get out in the world. Forget all about it, you know, and right back into the personality, mind, world. So there's a level of maturity that we come to where what's most interesting to us is noticing ourself as awareness, noticing ourself as the unaffected self, noticing ourself as the observer, as the presence. And that's a funny thing to be interested in. The reason I say it's a funny thing to be interested in is if you look at it from the mind's point of view, you know, it's not exciting because it's changeless. It doesn't do anything, you know. Everything in the world is, and everything in the mind and everything in the body is shifting and changing, and there's lots of experience there, and it's exciting, you know. And the awareness, you know, by comparison from the mind's point of view, well, there's just not much there to want to pay attention to. So if we are interested in remaining aware of awareness, even as we go out throughout the day, to remain somewhat in tuned to awareness and not to go completely out, that means that there's a maturity that has happened that is beyond our identification with the mind. Jamie, I thinks it's a little bit unfair that I've been gone for a week and a half and then I come home and sit down and teach. Don't you think, Jacqueline?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, she's like, what's up with this? Go lay down, my love, because I'm sorry, it is what it is. Yeah, she wants me to go outside. So the quote is, quote number 789, the mind, which has obtained a burning desire for self-attention, which is self-inquiry, is said to be the fully mature one. I've commented on the maturity. What I also want to comment on is the fact that self-attention and self-inquiry are being put side by side as synonyms here. You know, and some people may not see it that way. Some people may think of self-inquiry as a question, you know, like, who am I or what am I? And they may think of the question as the inquiry. But I have always felt the same way that Sadhu Om does, that the question is just the tool, that the real inquiry is the interested attention on awareness. There's something in that interested attention that's asking, what am I? In a much more real way than any question ever could. You know, like if you wanted to know what the ocean was, right? You really wanted to know what's an ocean. You would go to the ocean. You would sit and listen to the waves. You would wade in and feel the water. You might taste the water, you know, smell the smells. You know, maybe you get a snorkel and start looking, you know, at the coral and the fish. You know, you'd really, if you want to know what's an ocean, you examine an ocean until you feel like you know fully what an ocean is, right? It's not the question, what's an ocean? It's the attention, the examination, the exploration, the being with. That's the real inquiry, and that's where the knowledge comes from, the direct knowledge. It comes from the real inquiry, the paying attention to the ocean until you know fully what an ocean is. Well, it's the same thing with the self. The real self-inquiry is the paying attention. So the quote says, the mind, which has obtained a burning desire for self-attention, which is self-inquiry, is said to be the fully mature one. So let's look at my journal entry from July 7th, 2015. What needs attention solely? What needs attention solely so it can be burned up by the heart fire of true desire? What needs attention? Are you trying to out-talk me? I think she is. Can you guys hear her? She's like, I can talk louder than you. What needs attention solely so it can be burned up by the heart fire of true desire? What remains still thriving and growing that needs to be tossed into the eternal flame so that no distractions remain? Show me and lead me to their end in whatever way is most effective. To me, that's kind of an interesting journal entry, because usually when I look at a quote, even though I originally contemplated the quote 2 or 3 years ago, usually when I look at a journal entry after looking at a quote, you know, I'll look at a quote now and I'll share what that means to me now, and then I'll go and I'll look at the journal entry and I'll really find that it meant the same thing. But that doesn't seem to be the case here. Because today when I looked at the quote, what I really focused on was paying attention to the self, self-awareness, right? Being interested in awareness. You know, like even now as I listen to my voice, noticing the awareness that's aware of the voice, right? And that's what I saw the quote pointing to today. But it looks like, for whatever reason, I can't even imagine it, when I looked at the quote back in July of 2015, what it really made me think of is, what's still here that's an obstacle to that? That's where my mind went. What's still here that's an obstacle to being able to notice the self? What's hiding the self? What might be blind? What might be in a blind spot for me that still needs to be purified, still needs to be healed, still needs to be released? Again, what needs attention solely so it can be burned up by the heart fire of true desire? What remains still thriving and growing that needs to be tossed into the eternal flame so that no distractions remain? Really, it's shocking to me that I almost wonder if I read the wrong quote that day. Had my eyes on the wrong page or something. Not that this isn't a good question.
It is a good question. I just don't see what it has to do with this quote.
What needs attention solely so it can be burned up by the heart fire of true desire? What remains still thriving and growing that needs to be tossed into the eternal flame so that no distractions remain? And then the prayer is, show me and lead me to their end in whatever way is most effective. So even though I don't see a direct connection between this quote and this journal entry, I have a lot of respect for this journal entry. It's good, I think. I think it's really, really good for us to ask with the sincerity of our heart to see what we still need to see. You know, what are my blind spots? Where am I not yet healed or not yet letting go? Please show me. Bring it to my attention. Bring it to my awareness. So that I can let it go. It's a good prayer. It's a really good prayer. And we could even say that the way that I interpreted this quote today and the way that I seem to have interpreted this quote 2 years ago are two sides of one coin. One side of the coin is being aware of awareness. Capital S, self-inquiry. Capital S, self-attention. And the other side of the coin is finding the obstacles that are still a part of my believing, my thought system, often called little s, self-inquiry, right? Questioning my way of thinking so that I can see through it. Is this true? Am I absolutely certain this is true? Why do I believe this, right? Little s, self-inquiry. So again, the quote, the capital S self-inquiry, says, the mind, which has obtained a burning desire for self-attention, which is self-inquiry, is said to be the fully mature one. And the interpretation, the journal entry, which is referring to little s self-inquiry, what needs attention solely so it can be burned up by the heart fire of true desire? What remains still thriving and growing that needs to be tossed into the eternal flame so that no distractions remain? Show me and lead me to their end in whatever way is most effective. And maybe as I read the quote just now, maybe I saw kind of the angle that I looked at this quote with in 2015. I think that I might have perceived, you know, the quote is again talking about the fully mature one. And I think I looked at that and probably had a thought something like, I'm not mature yet. I don't yet want to pay great attention to the self. And then that assessment of myself would have led me to ask, what's in the way? And that's probably how I got to this journal entry. Because again, when I write the journal, I'm not just looking at the quote and saying, here's what I think the quote means. I'm looking at the quote and saying, how does this apply to me right now? And so I probably saw that word mature, saw this definition of mature, a burning desire for self-attention, and thought, I'm not there. I don't have a burning desire for self-attention. And that led me to write, well, then what needs attention so that it can be burned up? What's in my way? What are my obstacles? So let's see. We have 5 minutes left. I'll go ahead and look at 790. 790 says, since this mind, which has very well understood that the consciousness which shines as I alone is the source of full and real happiness, now seeks self because of its natural craving for happiness, this intense desire to attend to self is indeed the highest form of devotion. Some of these long sentences really crack me up. But it's interesting because it says, since this mind, you know, that kind of makes you say, what is it that wants to awaken? What is it that guides us into spiritual practice, guides us into self-inquiry, whether it's capital S or little s self-inquiry? What is it that does that? And you know, a part of the answer, even though I don't think everyone likes this answer, a part of the answer has to be the ego. It's not all of the answer. Because the true self is self-realized. The true self isn't desiring self-realization. It is self-realized. There's something that happens in the ego where the ego becomes interested in self-realization. And the ego starts moving in that direction. And the ego even goes far enough in that direction that it really begins to accept that it needs to end. You know, it accepts that it's the problem. Listen to what this quote says. Since this mind, which has very well understood that the consciousness which shines as I alone is the source of full and real happiness, now seeks self because of its natural craving for happiness, this intense desire to attend to self is indeed the highest form of devotion. But this is saying this mind understands that happiness comes from consciousness alone. Therefore, this mind is now seeking the self because it wants that happiness. And then it goes on to say, attending to the self now, right? Putting attention on the self. That's the highest form of devotion. That's how this needs to be. That's how this journey needs to be completed. Is by placing the attention with the self. But the mind has come to the point of maturity that it permits that. The mind has come to the point of understanding. That happiness can never come from the mind, being itself. And so it permits. You know, NTI says this. There's a little bitty book in NTI, NTI Titus, where it talks about the point where the mind becomes a partner in the journey. The mind surrenders to the journey. Doesn't mean there won't be a final kick in there, a little bit of a panic in there. But the mind is not the enemy all the way. So I only have 1 minute left, so let me just quickly read the journal entry, and then if needed, I'll come back to this next week. The journal entry for 790 says, who wants to awaken? Does awareness want to awaken? No, there is no such thought in awareness. It is the mind that wants to awaken, just as it is the mind that doubts and becomes distracted. What does it mean if it is the mind that wants to awaken? It means that the power the mind has to distract from self and to create a world of problems, suffering, and fear can now be turned toward self. Maybe the mind itself cannot awaken, as some say, but all of that power turned back around with the purpose of self-realization cannot be useless. Let me just read this last paragraph one more time. Listen to the power of the mind in this paragraph, and then think about how powerful it is to take that power and turn it around to self-attention. What does it mean if it is the mind that wants to awaken? It means that the power the mind has to distract from self and to create a world of problems, suffering, and fear can now be turned toward self. Maybe the mind itself cannot awaken, as some say. But all of that power turned back around with the purpose of self-realization cannot be useless. The power to create a world turned around to self-attention, a desire for self-realization. Think about how powerful that is. And with that, I'm going to release the mic. Now, Jacqueline and I are up next, but what I need to do is save this audio. We can't speak and save an audio at the same time. So, Cheryl, if you could just, just make a couple of announcements, and I will put our hand up when I'm done saving the audio, okay? And I am releasing the mic.